You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 22nd of October. We got local inflation data, 10 a.m. expected 3.5% from 3.3 previously. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today is Emily Mabandra. FNB Wealth and Investments, that Fashini update. It spooked the entire SA Inc. market. We saw all sorts of stocks down, but Fashini over 16%. Martin Ackerman, Citadel, the gold run. Yeah, it's fallen back today, but a potential impact on our local economy and tax revenues. And then we're going to chatting with TransUnion South Africa, the younger generation, how they're responding to and using credit. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, two listed retailers where you get a chunk of the business for free, potentially sizable upside for patient investors in Woolies and Pick and Pay. Bloomberg Gold Silver extend losses as equity rally stalls. Gold at one point down over $200. Morning markets. The US was reddish. S&P up 2 points, which is 0.01%. And then the Nasdaq down 0.6%. The East is all red. Sydney off 0.4%. Tokyo, 0.5% lower. Hong Kong, just over 1% down. And Tencent, almost 1.5% down. Commodities, mostly red. Gold futures, 4,130. Brent is the only green at 6,203. Platinum, 1,530. Palladium, 1,440. The Rand is 1,740. Bitcoin, 108,200. And top 40 opening call, we're looking for a green open, 140 points or 0.14% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Training now with Zamelia Mbandra, FNB Wealth and Investments. Zamelia, appreciate the early morning time. The Fashini Group trading update yesterday. A lot of moving parts. Short answer, HEPS under pressure. And a lot of the, I suppose, red flags. Certainly market hated on it. The stock down 16% on the day. Your thoughts on it? I mean, was it as bad as the market seems to have expected? Should we worry about other SA Inc. retailers? What's your thinking around that fairly horror Fashini update?
Yes, morning, Simon. Definitely. I think it was quite a lot of bad news packed into one update. And I think that's probably the reaction of the market. Quite huge consensus expectations misses, which I do expect to see quite a lot of analyst upgrades going forward, for the rest of the year and maybe the next couple of years as well. As you said, headline earnings pressure quite immense, 25% decline that is expected for this half. That's against consensus estimate, at least according to Bloomberg, of a 12.4% headline earnings growth for this year. And I think another thing is that pressure came from across the board from a geographical perspective. TFG Africa reported modest growth in sales. London TFG stood out, but that's mostly because of the propping up of those numbers by White Stuff, the recent acquisition. But you exclude that, the numbers sort of don't look as good anymore. And again, Australia has been struggling for quite a while. The major highlights you probably see quite a lot in news headlines is the negative operating leverage, particularly in Australia and Africa, meaning the growth in the revenue didn't translate to growth in operating profits. In fact, it was in the other direction from an operating profit standpoint. That's because of margin pressure. They basically said that gross margins were pressured by winter. Winter discount sales, I suppose, but also there were higher financing costs, the lease interest costs as well. So cost containment was not good. Again, geographical split or the mix wasn't that good from a performance standpoint, which I think that's the question about can we expect the same from local retailers?
Yeah.
Perhaps, I mean, the consumer is under pressure. rates are still relatively high, if you're being honest. But I think with Foschini as well, they have that geographical mix where, you know, Australia is not doing that great. So that imported into the results as well. So it's a challenging one, and I think we can expect some analyst downgrades going forward. And I think maybe it was a bit of an overreaction, but it was not a good update at all.
I take your point in it. It certainly wasn't, and I mean we'll see in time what the analysts make of it. But I like your point. I mean, maybe it's less about you know they've got some other issues happening. This might not be what we're going to see from, for example, other clothing retailers. I'm thinking Pep. I'm thinking Mr. Price. We will find out in time. But there's not necessarily a direct line between the two.
Yes, certainly. But yeah, we have to see in time with what we see from the other retailers. Retail sales numbers have been a bit mixed, but they've also sort of trended a bit positively, even though we saw slower growth last time out when we saw the data come out. But yeah, as I said, I mean, there were nuggets of highlights, positive highlights from these results, I have to say. I mean, White Stuff clearly doing well. The online platform is also clearly doing well. So maybe perhaps they'll leverage that growth going forward. But yeah, we'll have to see. But huge misses on what the market expected.
Yeah, massive misses, as you say. I mean, down 20 to 25%. Market was actually looking for low double digit up, and it went fundamentally the other way. We leave it there. Zameli Mabandra, FNB Wealth and Investments. Appreciate the early morning time. That's our poll today. LinkedIn and Twitter. Is SA Retail in trouble? Have your vote, have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Martin Ackerman, Chief Economist, Citadel. Martin, gold, it is, to be clear, we're now in its 10th green week in a row. It's a record for gold. I've never seen anything like it. But there really has been, and this is perhaps, it's not a news story, but there has been a fundamental shift towards gold in terms of the geopolitical uncertainty, dollar weakness, diversification, central banks and others away from the US dollar. This really is a mindset shift around gold, is my sense.
Yes, I think you're 100% right. This year has been a golden year, if we can put it that way. Gold typically performs well when the dollar is under pressure, but you know, currently it's totally out of whack because if you think about it, the dollar since Trump walked into the White House is about 10% weaker.
Yeah.
But the gold price is about 60% stronger. So it's not just dollar weakness. There's clearly a diversification from mostly central banks out of the dollar into gold. There's been quite strong buying, which underpinned the gold price, which is also a very important thing that one can discuss because they're not really buying other currencies. So there's a big question about the dollar as a reserve currency, but it's not as if central banks are buying euros or pounds. It's all going into gold. So, yeah, I think if you add on top of that, you know, gold started looking good after COVID with the high inflation globally, but it didn't really take off until we had increased global uncertainty. And in this year specifically, given the question mark around the sustainability of the dollar.
Do we also see, because I take your point there around, it's not a case of people leaving the dollar and then taking a euro, for example, which, you know, in many senses would make some sense. We go back to the Ukrainian war where Russian dollar assets were confiscated. It also, I think, maybe a lot of treasuries around the world were like, oh, hang on a second. And of course, gold, you can theoretically put it in your own vault, perhaps.
Yeah, so I think, you know, gold is a physical safe haven asset. It is currently competing with things like cryptos. That is the new kid on the block. But I think in this world of just massive uncertainty and the fact that, you know, you're 100% right. The world is looking for an alternative currency against the dollar. But it's not really that the euro or the pound is putting up their hands. You know, those economies have major issues in terms of competitiveness and productivity. If you think about some of the emerging economies, think about China, they still semi-pegged to the dollar, so they're not an alternative.
Yeah.
And cryptos, you know, still needs to, in many countries, get regulated. So that's why suddenly the old traditional kind of thing like gold is back in favor. And, you know, if you even look at the silver price, you know, silver is also increasing. So it's just this kind of basket of precious metals. And then the dollar, you know, is also getting pressure from, call it the emerging world, the BRICS countries, but it's much broader than that. Basically saying, well, you know, we just prefer trading in our local currency. So if Russia is still selling oil to whoever, they're not taking payment in dollars, you know. They get it in local currency from those countries. So the dollar is getting a headwind from many sides.
That's a great point. And instead of going, I don't know, renminbi, dollar, czar, we can just go direct and save all sorts of costs and hassles. And of course, less dollar demand. If you're an investor in gold, it's been a spectacular 2025. This is also good for our economy. It's maybe not, in fact, it's certainly not as big a sector as it has been at past in the last 140 years since the discovery of gold. But it helps our currency. It's going to help treasury as well, surely.
Yes, yeah. So obviously it's not just gold. So we also had platinum and palladium shooting up the lights. It's quite amazing if you think beginning of this year, we thought that a lot of the Trump policies is going to be negative on South Africa. Mm-hmm. And then basically in his big, beautiful bill, he scrapped the subsidies for electric vehicles. And voila, platinum starts to run because that goes traditionally in combustion engines in the exhaust system. So it just shows how one decision on that side have a major impact on this side. But you're right. So mining's done exceptionally well. There's quite a difference. If you look at mining companies, you know, that's a big chunk of the JSE. Mm-hmm. And that's why the JSE's been flying. But if you look at mining's contribution to GDP, that's only 6% of the economy. And agriculture, which is the fastest growing industry in this country over the last decade, is now, well, call it pretty much the same size. They're five and a bit. They came from the smallest industry to now basically being in line with the mining industry. So just shows you how very quickly things can change. But obviously from a listed point of view, yes, you're right. Mining companies benefited hugely this year. And on the back of that, also obviously paying more corporate tax, which should be a relief for the fiscus because that was something that they didn't expect that even in budget number three by the time they got to present that.
That said, more and more in tax, but during the, I think it was a 21 when we had the PGMs above 2,000, rhodium almost 30,000. From my memory, is the Treasury got about an extra 150 billion. We don't get that sort of number, do we?
No, but I think, you know, the numbers that they were looking for from the proposed VAT increase is obviously, you know, sustainable, or not sustainable, it's baked into the KTN forever. But I think this year, yeah, they should get a similar number, if not more, just from this commodity tailwind, which is a concern because, you know, it doesn't mean if the budget looks slightly better come midterm budget that we're out of the woods because we know that these commodity cycles come and go. So they're not, you know, it's not going to be there forever.
That's a good point. It's nice to have, but much as that 150 that we got a few years ago faded away, this will too. We'll leave it there. Martin Ackerman, Chief Economist, Citadel, always appreciate the insights.
Let your money benefit from experience with StanLib Asset Management. Find out about StanLib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for three decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Yishay here, Director of Research and Consulting, TransUnion South Africa. Yishay, appreciate the time. There's a perception out there that younger consumers, the sort of under 30 age group, sort of don't value credit. They're disengaged from the market. That is my sense of it. But a recent research report you did actually said, hang on a second, that's not necessarily true. And it is a big group. It's over 4 million people in that 18 to 30 category.
And that's exactly why we wanted to do this study. We all have these prevailing assumptions in the market about how these South African young consumers want to transact and what they want to do and how they want to engage. The study sort of took on like a Mythbuster sort of format where we actually tried to bust some of these myths, but we obviously used our data and some factual information that could help us assist to either prove them or disprove them.
The key thing is, I suppose in a sense, maybe they're coming at it slightly different from sort of older folks, and I'd put myself in that category. But the one that really stood out, they look at credit as an opportunity, not to spend, but to improve, to benefit themselves and improve their lives, which I got to be clear, that wasn't me under 30, but it is the new youth.
Yeah, we actually used our TransUnion Consumer Pulse Survey. We actually surveyed some of these young consumers. We actually do survey the full population, and then obviously we slice and dice the data, and 60% of the younger consumers actually tell us that they believe access to credit is important to achieving their financial goals. And that's very much aligned with what we try to do at TransUnion in terms of creating financial inclusion. within the society. So it's really great to see that enthusiasm with them. You know, they also tell us that, you know, they do believe, at least about 75% of them tell us that it's a tool to unlock better opportunities in their life.
Yeah.
And it's great that they're making that correlation between what credit can do for them versus, you know, just spending.
Do they feel that they have access to credit, or do they feel to a degree locked out of the system?
So interestingly, they do feel that they do have access. Over 40% of them tell us they do believe they have sufficient access to credit, which is actually higher than if you look at the broader population and what they're saying. So it's quite valuable that they see that. I think there's other tests that we do along the way that says, you know, do they actually go ahead and apply?
Mm.
What's that process like? What's that engagement like? But again, we're seeing that there's interest, we're seeing that there's engagement, but we also see a level of confidence coming through from the younger consumers in terms of the ability to transact in the credit economy.
And they're not, I mean, it's the other cliche, and I often said, I mean, I'm so grateful that I didn't have access to a credit card when I was younger, because I would have done it poorly, is the honest answer. But you make the point that the balance, average balance for a 21-year-old is 11,000, which is, I mean, in one sense, it's a lot for a 21-year-old, but it's not really. I mean, it's not the 100,000 sort of terror numbers we might think it would be. When they do get it, they manage it well.
Yeah, and I think it's a good interplay within the ecosystem. So lenders are recognizing, you know, that they're entering the market. There's some inherent risk that might come with them being, you know, not sort of formally in the credit system mm-hmm. before. And so we're seeing that at the lower age groups, they get lower balances. And they manage that through the time. So even from a lending perspective and a lender's perspective, sorry, you know, they can see that as the consumers get older, those balances actually grow in terms of where they are in their life stage, their income, their affordability and their maturity, not just age maturity, but financial maturity mm-hmm. as well. So it seems to be working quite well in the ecosystem.
Where are they in terms of delinquency compared to sort of other age categories? Are they better? Are they worse at paying back? Or where do they sit in that regard?
So the myth that we busted was really around that they're irresponsible when it comes to, or they struggle to meet their obligations. But the data did tell us otherwise. So when we did certain risk controls and we compared the young consumers to the rest of the population, they were very much either below or sort of in line with what the greater population is doing. So we bust that myth. You know, they're not necessarily more riskier than, let's say, the rest of the population.
Do they have? And the one trend which we do see in the younger generation is, this sounds almost sort of nasty, but a lack of loyalty. I mean, are they sort of move around, or is there a sense of loyalty to perhaps that first lender?
So again, you have to take out the broader context, right? So unfortunately, we do not see loyalty. Only 3% of consumers actually go back to their first lender.
Wow.
But that's not unique to the youth, though. Mm. That is actually overall, we're seeing that in the broader population as well. And it's also understanding the product lifecycle, because the first product or the first lender is usually a retailer, is usually a clothing account, according to our data. So in terms of that product graduation, they tend to return, or when they do return, they go to maybe a more sort of a banking institution or a financial institution to get that subsequent lending. So it does have an impact on the loyalty as well.
That's actually a great point. In some senses, it's horses for courses. We leave it there. Siyesha Hetia, Director of Research Consulting, TransUnion South Africa. Appreciate the time.
That's it for today. I was chatting with Petli Redenhuis yesterday. He, of course, Herenia Capital Advisors. We're talking about investing in nuclear. Petli's been beating this drum for some time. Of course, AI data centers are massively increasing demand, but frankly, the demand is picking up all over the place in terms of that baseload. Is nuclear on your investment watch list? That was the question we asked. Almost half said very interested. A third said, nope, seen this before. The rest said, yes, already invested. Have you ever Have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and an awesome review in your podcatcher of choice. We'll chat again tomorrow, bullish on local equities.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.